So here we have a Jubilee podcast. Drew Winters wrote some theme music, which is great. And now I feel I got to try and live up to that. So we've got some music at the beginning and the end. And well, other than that, it's a lot like a sermon, except that I'll probably wander about a little bit as I talk. But anyway, the idea of this podcast is just to give you an opportunity to contemplate, to wonder with me, even if we're not in person. And in the midst of this new way of being, this social distancing, this wondering whether we're at this for a week, 4 weeks, a month, 4 months, we don't know. In the midst of that, there are those saying, well, where's God in this? I mean, there are those churches, those folks who say, oh no, if you come to church, you can't possibly get COVID-19 because God will protect you. And that seems kind of bizarre. And then people wondering why God hasn't fixed it all. And we talk about Jesus walking with us and people going, well, then why isn't Jesus fixing this for us? Or can I walk with Jesus? Or is that too close? There's all sorts of wondering and speculating. And I think the question we need to ask ourselves first is who exactly is Jesus? I mean, perhaps for you, Jesus is some kind of cosmic Superman, and in this moment can change everything. And I won't take that away. I don't want to take away the miraculous Jesus, the Jesus who rises above our simple understanding of physics and nature and somehow can transcend those things. I don't need to take that away, but that's not the Jesus that I'm experiencing these days. In Matthew chapter 16, just a few verses, 13 to 17, you'd hear this. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, wish I could speak properly, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? See, they're asking the question. They said, well, some say John the Baptist, but others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. Jesus said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter answered, well, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood have not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. Blessed are you, Peter, he just said, because you haven't figured this out by reading scripture. You have experienced this. It's not a lesson you've been taught. You just know it in your bones. God has revealed it to you. You know the truth. What a question. What a remarkable moment. We're in a strange place right now, and so I have a neighbor, and he's still pretty sure that this is way overblown. All the social distancing and the stores closing and the stores that are open will only accept swipe or tap payments, no cash. He's like, what's wrong with cash? And I try to point out to him that, well, people are scared. People are afraid right now. And, you know, he wanted to name the virus geographically or racially, and I did not. Insisting that this is a worldwide problem and that a name can be used to blame, and that blame becomes quite racist. And we both agreed that racism is bad, so he backed off. And I noted that, you know, he and I, living in our neighborhood, our houses next to each other, we're in a pretty good place. Our privilege makes this more of an inconvenience than a mortal threat. And then, oh, God, he hated the word privilege. You know, well, maybe you hate the word privilege too, and or maybe you know people who hate the word privilege. It's an awkward word. I understand that. And he went to town on that. I mean, he wanted to know why should he be excluded from the conversation just because he's male, just because he's white, just because he's well off. He put it, I think he said, comfortably middle class. Because he's worked hard, he said, you know, he's never stolen anybody's land, he's never treated anybody unfairly. And by the way, he has had real difficulties in his life that nobody else would understand. So how is it that he gets thrown in with the privileged? He doesn't feel privileged. And I tried to talk. I tried to talk to him about culture and a system that's tilted in his favor and my favor, and how his feelings and his concerns were acknowledged without him having to block trains or set things on fire. And he wasn't buying it. And then he started in on pride parades and police not being allowed. And suddenly we're talking about everything. And I just asked him, whoa. Are you a cop? Are you planning to go to the next pride parade? And he shot back, well, it's principle. You know, once you give in to those people, they're just going to keep taking and taking. And then there's nothing left for us. Those people. Nothing left for us. I could feel my neck getting red and my eyes were going to get large in my head. And I was holding my breath. And I said, well, I gave in. Those people? Seriously, you just said that? And nothing left for us? Seriously, that's your big worry? And I was ready to let him have it. You know, not just for the us-them thing or his inability to understand what I was trying to say. Not just because I am pretty sure that this guy and I don't vote the same way, ever. No, I was ready to give him all of my pent-up hurt and anger over what's happening all over my country, all over the continent. All over the world right now. I'm frustrated and I'm hurt and what I hear just makes me crazy. And I was about to unleash a holy tirade on this man who I had decided in that moment was embodying everything that is wrong with the world right now. But then his son appeared and needed him to slip next door to show him something on a car he was working on. And so he slipped away. While he was gone, well, you think I could take that time maybe to calm down. But I decided to do something different. I decided to get worked up. So I paced along my backyard and I prepared my attack. And I was ready. I was going to cover the social distancing with some really good posturing and equivocation of the fascists who had given away too much voice. Then I was going to take a couple of shots at Islamophobia and then lean in on the LGBTQ rights, the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women, and then I was going to tie it all up with a couple of choruses of We Shall Overcome. And if you don't remember We Shall Overcome, that's okay. You're probably younger than me. But I can hear Pete Seeger singing it, and I can hear the righteousness and the hope and the folky strength. We shall overcome. I was going to give it to him. And then Jesus said to me, who do you say that I am? Then it took me aback ever so slightly. I mean, I know that Jesus has appeared as a gardener before, but not in my garden. But there he was. Ebony eyes. Ebony skin. Dirty jeans, torn t-shirt, the shiniest hair. And he's looking right at me. Who do you say that I am? Even though he doesn't look like the pictures I grew up with, I know exactly who he is. I could, not from a book, not from a picture, I just know in my heart I knew exactly who he is, and I forgot all about my neighbor, and I just said, you are the eschatological manifestation of the ground of our being. You are the ontological foundation of the context of our very selfhood revealed. And Jesus said, what? You're Jesus, the Christ, Son of God, begotten, not made, Emmanuel, God with us. And he looked at me rather patiently and said, Norm, you're not listening. I know the theology. I asked you, who do you say that I am? Feeling a little chastened, I looked at myself, ready to go battle with my neighbor, the embodiment of all that is wrong with the world. And then I looked back to Jesus, just standing there, looking like a gardener, looking like a guy, looking like somebody that I would have a beer with. And so I tried again. You're the one who expects patience of me. You're the one who invites me into real relationship, not just with you, but with others, real relationship. You're the one who invites me to respect my neighbor and to realize that sharing and trust are two-way streets. Understanding, love, and patience are the real foundations of relationship, not a I'm right, you're wrong dialectic. I winced even as I said dialectic, but I think he appreciated it because he smiled. And he says, so you want me to just shut up? No, Norm, never. But don't just talk, okay? Listen. Remember, you may not be crazy about him, but I love your neighbor. My neighbor returned, and we talked some more. And we talked a little about our lives and our kids, our jobs, our fears, and what it must be like for other people, their lives, their fears, their kids, their parents. And I think we hurt each other. Now, I'm pretty sure that he's still going to vote wrong in the next election. But I suspect that social distancing aside, we got a little bit closer. My youngest son, he lives in North Carolina. And now he's a big shot professor, so he's not likely to come back, you know, to live in our house. So his bedroom is now my office. I have a great big desk. It's perfect for working. I got bookshelves and wingback chair and an ottoman. I can put my feet up. I can read. I also have my turntable and vinyl records. And they had remained hidden for, oh gosh, over a decade, maybe two decades. But when he was gone and I got to build my office, first thing to come out was my records. And it's been so much fun to reconnect with the music of my life. And there are a few hundred records, and just going through them has been a treat, right? I mean, I've been doing this now for a couple of years since I built my office, and I'm not through all of them yet. You know, and it's not just listening to classics from Louis Armstrong to Supertramp, but it's discovering, the lesser accomplishments on my Sound Explosion KTEL albums, or The Partridge Family, or Air Supply. Just going through these albums and categorizing them, because I'm forever changing the way I file them. And it's jazz and folk and classical and pop, and I've got a whole section of crap, which actually I love. When doing that, I've discovered that I used to hide money in my record sleeves. And I found some money in a Psychedelic Furs album. I mean, not a fortune, you know, but more than I remember having when I was an undergrad, which really probably was the last time I listened to the Psychedelic Furs. And you know that feeling, that, oh, found money. I thought, wow, okay. The Boo and I, we're going out for dinner tonight, and we're going somewhere nice, and we're not taking a coupon. We're going to have some fun. And Jesus said, who do you say that I am? And I jumped. I mean, well, wouldn't you? What? Well, you're the... And then, not wanting to repeat the last embarrassment, I kept my theological training to myself. I considered the situation. And I looked him right in the eye. Interesting, he didn't look the same this time. He just seemed different. His coloring was different. His hair was different. His eyes. And yet I knew it was him. I considered the situation and I said, so do you want to hear my original Jesus Christ Superstar album? And he looked at me. Seriously? You know that if I'm listening to anything, it's the Beatles. Okay, Norm, maybe Godspell. But no, I'm not here to listen. Who do you say that I am? So, understanding that he wasn't there to listen to records, I realized it must be the restaurant that inspired his appearance. So I said, you're not much of a restaurant guy, are you? You seem to like to eat in people's homes and way out in the middle of nowhere, and you're the one who tells me to love my neighbor as I love myself. And Jesus handed me my credit card. I don't even know where he got it. But I took the card and I went online and I made a donation to a wonderful organization of people who are trying to make it all work in this time of social distancing and this time when people aren't able to make full wages. I donated some money to help out my neighbor. And then I slipped out for some really nice takeout burritos. Not extravagant, but they were really nice burritos. And the boo and I had them, and, well, Jesus stayed to say grace. You know, I've asked around, quietly, carefully, of course, because you don't want people to think that I'm weird. But it turns out it's not just me. It had been a long labor. Why is it that first children are never predictable? And after hours and hours of contractions and waiting and breathing and pushing and screaming, a little baby girl was in her arms. A baby woman. All warm and scrunchy, and there were 10 little fingers and 10 little toes, and oh my God, how little those fingers were! And yet how perfect. And she smelled just like a baby. And there was no way that anything in life could have prepared her for this moment. And Jesus asked her, "Who do you say that I am?" And she said, "You are the fulfillment of every hope, the promise of life. You're the one who can dance with joy for me because I'm too shaky to do it myself." And Jesus began to dance. He was on his way home from the bank, the bank that couldn't or wouldn't help. And he knew that the next few weeks were going to be very difficult. He didn't know if he'd be able to keep his home. And he felt defeated, and he felt ashamed, and he felt betrayed, and he felt foolish, and he just felt cheated. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Walking across the parking lot to his car, he just wanted to cry. How could he have failed? Jesus was getting out of the car next to his. "Who do you say that I am? Unless you can lend me money, I don't really care." "No, really, come on. Who do you say that I am?" The man looked at him and said, "You are the one who was betrayed and persecuted, and you were humiliated, and you were beaten." "That's right. That's all that the powers of this world could do to me." "And it wasn't enough." "That's right. It's never enough. Your life will always be more important. Your life will always be more valuable and more lasting than anything that the world can do to you. Who do you say that I am?" "You are the one who shows how limited the ideas of success and failure really are. You are the one that promises resurrection no matter what." And Jesus smiled. She was sitting in the living room, wondering what to do next. She just finished another bottle and hid it in a garbage bag in the garage, and she still felt lousy. The world was not getting any better. And when her children got home, they would know that she was drunk. And then that would make her want to drink even more. And she didn't feel like a mother, and she didn't feel like a wife, and she didn't feel like a woman. On her best days, she didn't feel at all. But today she felt weak and ashamed and guilty. And she knew what the drinking was doing to her family. Just a glance over to the mirror on the wall, and she could see what it was doing to her. And she was crying, and she was moaning. But the real tears were so deep inside that they would never come out, never be seen, never be shared. Jesus said to her, "Who do you say that I am?" "I don't know you," was all she could say. "I am the one who loves you, the real you. And there is nothing for you to prove to me. I know your tears, the tears that you hold deep inside. And I love you. I am with you. I'll even go to a meeting with you when you're ready to be alive. I am the one who wants you to feel, can help you feel, and knows that you will feel better. My Lord, my God," she said. "That's right." And so she called a number that she'd kept in her purse for months now. And she met some people and began to feel better in time. He sat in the hospital after his father died, wondering why he felt like an orphan. He was 60 years old, for goodness sakes. But he felt so alone. And Jesus said to him, "Who do you say that I am?" She wondered if this person was really the one to share her life. Could it really be as good as her hopes and dreams? Could they really make a life together? Jesus said to her, "Who do you say that I am?" You see, every day, Jesus is with us asking the same question. Who do you say that I am? Right now, in this moment. And as our moments change, our answers are going to change as well. And some days, you know, we don't hear the questions. We're just too busy to notice the divine presence. We've got everything going on. Some days we choose not to answer. We choose not to welcome that divine presence into our lives because our paths are already set and we have no desire to hear about another. Even if it's a better way, we've got it figured out. But here's the thing, the presence never changes. Remember who Jesus is. As a matter of faith, we say that Jesus is God in our presence, the divinity in our human existence. And so every day, we are confronted by the divine, by dreams beyond imagination, strength beyond power, love beyond our experience. Every day, you and I, all of us, we are confronted by God. And the question is always the same. Who do you say that I am? Or perhaps more simply, how will you respond to me in your life? What will you do because of me? I've imagined some encounters, but you will live real encounters. And if you are willing to consider the presence of God all around you, if you dare to respond to that divinity, to that God presence, then your experiences will be far more profound and life-changing than any podcast, than any stories could ever be. Because that's the promise of our faith. In the good times, in the hard times, in all the times in between, that is the promise of our faith. God is present with us and asks us, "Who do you say that I am?" I invite you to answer. Thank you so much for listening to this first podcast, really. I invite you to check out our website for updates for things that are going on at Jubilee right now. In this difficult time, we are trying to offer assistance where we can and ways of connecting. We have virtual coffee gathering coming up. We have daily meditations. We have time and gifts to help those who are looking for help. So there's things happening. www.jubileeunited, like it's one word, www.jubileeunited.ca. And I will be posting another one of these next week. I hope you'll tune in then. God bless.